You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 14th of December 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, the first news story I have today is a little bit out of the ordinary for Radio Albion. I have steered clear of concentrating on COVID-19 content, although that is what everybody is interested in. I don't really see that it has that much to do with ethnology and nationalism, apart from highlighting the failures of the type of government that we have, which is not a nationalist government, and also the failures of globalism, which has allowed this virus to make its way across the world. But at the moment, in Britain in particular, we have this scare about Omicron. And it is really highlighting the disconnect between what's actually going on, what scientists are saying, and what the government are doing. I think it really highlights the fact that all the Western governments are being directed somehow. And I believe they're being directed by the people behind the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab and BlackRock, and this idea of stakeholder capitalism that we're going to have, where governments only have the same amount of authority as these other groups, corporations and NGOs that are also seen as stakeholders. And we can see this when we see every Western government coming out with the same slogans, such as Build Back Better, and all of them having lockdowns in response to COVID-19. And then we see governments that are not a part of this, such as Lukashenko's Belarus, and they have refused to go along with this. And Lukashenko said, I believe it was the IMF or the World Bank had offered him billions of dollars if he would have a lockdown, and he refused to have a lockdown. So it's like all these governments are just dancing to the same tune that's being played to them by these corporate pipers. And I think we can really see this with this hysteria that there is about this Omicron variant. And of course, everybody was predicting that a new variant would appear just before Christmas and we would have to lock down again, and there would be a big push for everybody to get vaccinated some more because the vaccines so far won't work on the new variant. And of course, all of those predictions have now come true. And yesterday there was an article which was published in the Daily Mail, and it was actually by the doctor that discovered Omicron. And she is mystified at the reaction to it that she has seen, particularly in Britain, because it doesn't actually bear any relevance to the facts. And I thought it would be interesting to go into this article, just because it shows us that something else is going on here. It cannot be that the government is just concerned about our health, and they certainly aren't concerned about the economy with the measures that they're taking. This is what she has to say. Her name is Dr. Angelique Coetzee. The UK government's handling of what Boris Johnson warned will be a tidal wave of Omicron infections verges on hysteria, with predictions of 1 million cases by the end of the month and concerns about the NHS being overwhelmed with up to 10,000 hospitalisations per day. I gather there is talk of Christmas again being cancelled and a possible New Year lockdown. Yet you only have to look at the picture in South Africa, where the world's first known cases of Omicron were spotted, to realise this reaction is out of all proportion to the risks posed by this variant, And I should know, because I am the doctor who first raised the alarm about Omicron back in November. And what do we know about these lockdowns? Do we know that these lockdowns actually lower the numbers of people that actually get COVID? Well, we have a case study, don't we? We have Sweden. We can look at Sweden. And the curve on the graph of Sweden is just the same as all these other countries that did have a lockdown. So we can see that the lockdowns really don't make any difference. And why would you be wanting to have a lockdown for a virus which is far milder than the other versions that we've had before? The variant appeared to have been circulating in South Africa for some time, having previously been identified in Botswana. It was my duty, both as a GP and as chair of the South African Medical Association, to report my concerns. I have no regrets about doing so, but I was astonished by the extraordinary worldwide reaction in the days that followed, with Britain and some other European nations imposing heavy travel restrictions on flights from across southern Africa, as well as imposing tighter rules at home on mask wearing, fines, and extended quarantines. I said then that we didn't know anywhere near enough about Omicron to make such judgments or impose such policies. Now I find myself even more astonished by the UK government's latest pronouncements, given what has become apparent about Omicron in the past 4 weeks. I have been working with Omicron patients throughout that time, and I think it is safe to say that I know more than most about the effects that it can have on human beings. As a general practitioner for more than 33 years, I am one of the foot soldiers who sees patients first. We clinicians deal day to day with real people, not statistical projections. And I can reassure you that the symptoms presenting in those with Omicron are very, very mild compared with those we see with the far more dangerous Delta variant. And the Delta variant is the one that we've apparently had all year. Don't just take my word for it. I have seen quite a few Omicron patients who have previously had the Delta variant, and they will tell you that while no one ever wants to get COVID, they feel almost lucky that it was only Omicron they had the second time around. My first Omicron case, a young man who came into my surgery, initially thought he had been in the sun for too long after working outside. Patients typically present with muscle pain, body aches, a headache, and a bit of fatigue. And the symptoms don't seem to get any worse than that. After about 5 days, they clear up, and that's it. And this is what we know about this. So it doesn't sound much worse than a cold, and it sounds far preferable to get than the previous versions that we have had. In the part of South Africa where I work, there haven't been many patients admitted to hospital with Omicron, and most have been treated at home using anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen and low doses of cortisone. And I should point out here that Africa does have a much younger population than the West. So it could be that because it's very young people that are actually catching this, young people are far less likely to get complications from COVID. But that's the only possible thing that you can think of that might counteract what she is actually saying here. But either way, if it's a much milder virus, it means that even people that are older are not going to have so many complications from it. Continuing, she says, bear in mind too that most of those who contract Omicron here are unvaccinated. Only 26% of South Africans are fully vaccinated. While this is certainly not an argument against vaccination, I cannot stress the importance of that enough. It is reassuring to know that even unprotected bodies fight off this variant much more easily than Delta. Current data indicates that the majority of cases admitted to ICUs are unvaccinated people. In the UK, where the levels of vaccination are much higher, there is even less reason to worry. A Pfizer-BioNTech booster given after an initial round of either Oxford, AstraZeneca or Pfizer raises the level of protection, offering 70 to 75% protection against symptomatic infection. To date, some 23.5 million Britons have had all three vaccinations, so it is completely over the top to be talking about Plan Cs or lockdowns. Remember, this is the woman that discovered this Omicron, so she knows more than the politicians. Indeed, I am disappointed by such knee-jerk reactions. They bear no relation to what we are seeing in surgeries in South Africa, where people rarely even discuss Omicron. As one Twitter user commented, COVID has become a UK neurosis. Of course, your government cannot afford to be complacent. According to the UK Health Security Agency, 10 people have so far been hospitalised with the variant in England. And Omicron is expected to become the dominant coronavirus in the capital in the next 48 hours. 10 people. That's all. We heard yesterday Boris Johnson, or somebody claimed, I think it was Boris Johnson, claimed that we had already had the first person to die a COVID-related death from Omicron. And of course, you don't know what they've actually died of. They haven't died from Omicron. We don't know what the comorbidities were. We don't know if they died in a car accident. They just happened to have COVID-19. And I'm not sure that they can actually tell that it is actually Omicron that somebody has. I don't think they test people once they've died to see what version of coronavirus they had. They just do these PCR tests and they know that they have this Omicron. And then if they know that that's in that particular area, they make a guess and say that it's probably Omicron that the patient had. On a visit to a London vaccination clinic yesterday, Boris Johnson dismissed the idea that it is somehow a milder version of the virus. Well, how can he do that when all the evidence shows that it is this lady here, she says it's much, much milder. Very, very is the descriptive term she used. Boris Johnson revealed that at least one person is confirmed to have died with Omicron. Even one death is one too many, but will there be many more? Our experience in South Africa suggests not. While COVID-19 admissions are rising sharply in more than half of our 9 provinces, deaths are not rising as dramatically, and neither is the average length of time people stay in hospital. And remember, 3/4 of the population in South Africa are not vaccinated. Admittedly, our laboratories do not carry out genetic sequencing for every death, so we do not know how many COVID-related deaths can be attributed to Omicron and how many to other variants. But yesterday there were only 11 COVID-related deaths in South Africa, far fewer than the 578 weekly average reported at Delta's peak. So that's a huge difference there. If they were getting 578 a week with Delta and they are getting only 11 a week now, I mean, we should be welcoming this Omicron and trying to get as many people as possible to get it so that they become immune to this without having to take the risk of having serious symptoms from it. She says, if Omicron really were such a deadly variant, we would expect the numbers to have shot up. Yet that simply is not happening here. This makes it all the more peculiar to see what is happening in the UK. This huge overreaction is scaring people unnecessarily. And if your government does decide to go for a hard lockdown in the new year, that could end up doing far more harm than good. That is because Omicron could potentially be of great help to us, which is certainly not something you could say about the Delta variant. A hard lockdown would slow the process of Omicron making its way through the population, and allowing people to develop the vital antibodies which will move your population towards herd immunity. And I'll just stop there, because weren't we told that once we get everybody vaccinated, then they'll have the antibodies to have the equivalent of herd immunity? And quite clearly, they don't. The only way to beat this is to get proper herd immunity to the virus itself. And this version of the virus is the perfect version to allow that to happen. She says the next variant that might come along might be slower spreading but more severe, and so we will need all the help we can get from such natural immunity. That can only be of value to us all, unlike restrictive measures that hit the economy hard and will bring about more hardship and poverty with no gain beyond satisfying the politicians' need to be seen to be doing something. So my message to Boris and his ministers is this. Stay calm, take it day by day, and do not panic people, because that will only end in chaos. You are already seeing problems with the NHS vaccination booking system following the Prime Minister's address to the nation of an accelerated booster plan on Sunday, and basically the whole government website crashed. They panicked everybody. They induced the hysteria, and they didn't have the resources to cope with that. I mean, it's just an absolute shambles. In the fight against COVID, as in life generally, it is important to pick your battles. And in overreacting to Omicron, we are in danger of missing out on the benefits of a variant which could be a friend rather than a foe. So this is the sensible way to look at this. And Boris Johnson is doing the complete opposite of what you would really want to do if you want people to get herd immunity. We should be thankful that we have this Omicron, and it has evolved in a way that now produces much milder symptoms. I mean, it could end up being a godsend. It could end up giving everybody immunity to it, and that's it. We may not have any more problems with COVID-19. So an interesting news report there, and I'm grateful to this doctor for making her thoughts known, and for the Daily Mail for printing it. Well, moving on to more of our usual fare here at Radio Albion, we have some news from Hungary. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban has accused Western European governments of having embarked on a grand exercise in human experimentation by mixing huge masses of Muslims with indigenous Christians in the hopes that something good would come of it. Now, I would suggest that this is not really an experiment, because they know what the results of this are. Empires of the past have known what the results are of mixing one ethnicity with another. They do it deliberately so that nobody can form a resistance to the tyranny that is above them. If you look back in history, you don't have to look any further than your Bible, really, and you see what the Assyrian Empire did, and they picked up the tribes of Israel, and they removed them from the land that they were in, and they put them in a new land as a buffer zone between one people and the next, because a house divided against itself will not stand. So if you have a country that is divided by different groups of people, they're not going to be able to mount a resistance to the tyranny that is above them, basically. That's the point of doing this. And the Soviets did exactly the same, didn't they? Stalin moved populations around to deter any resistance to communism. You've got the same thing that is going on here. Plus, you've also got these special interest groups for whom it is of benefit to them. If you're going to be living in somebody else's country and you're a different ethnic group to them, then it's of benefit to you for that country to have as many different ethnic groups in it as possible, because that's going to weaken the host group. So this plays into this competition that there is between the different ethnic groups for power and influence. And this is why we see members of these other ethnic groups advocating for multiculturalism, which is, of course, something they wouldn't do in their own countries. You won't see them doing that in their own countries, because it would not be a benefit to them to be doing that. And this is the bizarre thing, is that white people are going along with this. White liberals and left-wing people go along with it and think that multiculturalism is great, when in actual fact it's just weakening them. It's maladaptive. And I do like the way that he points out that Christians are indigenous to Hungary. In an interview with Hungary's Kossuth Radio, a transcript of which has been seen by Breitbart London, Prime Minister Orban was asked about a then-upcoming constitutional court ruling on whether the EU rules on immigration take precedence over Hungarian law. Well, of course they don't. How can the EU's rules on immigration take precedence over the laws of a sovereign country? Then, of course, that's what the EU are saying. This may herald a legal clash with Brussels if the Hungarian jurists fail to affirm EU supremacy, similar to the EU's ongoing sovereignty dispute with Poland. And nobody thought, when they joined up with the European Union, that they were going to lose their sovereignty. Everybody just thought that this was an economic union. It was just going to make life easier to trade between the countries of Europe. No, nobody thought that this was going to be a political union ruled by unelected bureaucrats that you don't even know who they are, while at the same time trumpeting democracy and democratic values all around the world, and what a wonder democracy is. Well, we have no democracy in the European Union. We don't elect Ursula von der Leyen or Herman Van Rompuy or any of these other European Union bureaucrats. They're just foisted upon us. The real democracy would be having an ethnostate and voting for the people to represent your ethnicity. That would be a proper democracy. In fact, it even says that, I believe, in the Greek writings that are on democracy. It says that democracy only works if you have one ethnic group that is governing itself. And Orbán understands this. He understands this, and he does not want to import a different population into Hungary. He says, in the whole European context, Hungary is a special country because we are the only one in which the people have decided what to do. We had a referendum on immigration, Orbán told his interlocutor. Contrasting this with a situation in Western Europe where the governments, the elites, think that immigration is a good thing, and so they let in huge numbers of immigrants in 2015-16, thinking that something good would come of it. And of course, this is the point that Mark Collette and Laura Taylor have made with their We Were Never Asked documentary. We've never been asked in Britain. The population of Britain have never been asked if they want mass immigration, if they want open borders, if they wanted to be replaced in their own capital city. This has never been put to us. And any time a political force arises that wants to speak up for the people and to stand against this, then they're smeared, slandered in the press. The Elections Commission refuses their applications to be registered as a political party. Everything is thrown in the way of anybody doing anything about this population replacement that is going on. And it's quite incredible that we do actually have this country in Europe that actually put that to the vote. They had a referendum on immigration. The Hungarian people voted and said, no, we don't want immigration into our country. And the EU, which claims to be the promoter of democracy around the world, says, well, we can't have that. We can't have the people of Hungary deciding what they want to do. You have to do what we tell you to do instead. And I think Orbán is being very charitable here by saying that these politicians thought that something good would come of it. There may be some politicians who did genuinely fall for this and think something good would come of it. But there are also politicians that are representatives of these other groups, and they understand full well that it means the weakening of the host nation to do this, and therefore it is of benefit to their own people group. He says, since it cannot be scientifically, or rather empirically, proven in advance whether or not it will be good, I think that this is a supposition or an experiment. So the Western Europeans have embarked on a great experiment to see if something good will come from mixing huge masses of Muslims with indigenous Christians, the Hungarian alleged. Well, it's not really an experiment. We have a study that was done by the United Nations, and this study was looking at whether diversity was a benefit and multiculturalism. And the results of this study, which was the biggest study ever done, it showed that all the results, it was just nothing but negative results. There was less of a sense of community, there was more crime, people didn't go out so much, they just hunkered down in front of the television. I think it was called the cost of diversity, the downside of diversity. That's it. If you look up the downside of diversity UN study, you'll probably come across it. It's a very famous study. And this was done well before 2015. In fact, the authors of the study actually sat on the results of it because they were confirmed leftists and they didn't want people to know the results of this because it contradicted so much their hopes of what the study was going to prove. And of course, nationalists would say, well, this is just common sense. Just about every war you can think of has come about through two or more different ethnic groups living within one territory. it is just common sense that it's just going to produce strife. And yet our governments have gone along with this. And as I say, I'm sure some of them thought that it was genuinely going to be a good thing. But there are others that thought, well, this is great. This means it's going to weaken the host group, and it will strengthen the out group. So you've got conflicting interests when you have multiculturalism anyway. He said that these pro-mass migration leaders, perhaps to their credit, were doing the migrants themselves a good turn, but noted that they think that they're also doing themselves a good turn because they see this as resulting in a better France, a better Germany, a better Netherlands, or a better Belgium. I have never believed in this experiment, he admitted frankly. I don't like experimenting on people. Human experimentation is dangerous. And this is another point. These politicians, they do see that they're doing the migrants a good turn. And as individuals, they might be helping an individual. An individual Somalian that comes to Britain is going to be better off than he was in Somalia, but perhaps not so in actual fact, because some Somalian mothers now are sending their teenage sons back to Somalia because there is so much crime in London. They're less likely to become criminals if they go back to Somalia and are brought up by the Somalians. But financially and health-wise, it may be that these individuals are better off. But as a group, as a people group, it's not doing them any favours at all. Because in the country where the majority of their people group are, all the brightest ones are leaving. All the doctors are leaving. The country itself is not being built up because instead of concentrating all their efforts on doing what's best for the nation and doing what's best for their people, they're just doing what's best for the individual and they're fleeing the country that they're from. And the best people are being left there. That the nationalists and the people that really want to build up their countries and that love their people, they're left behind in that country. And all the ones that don't have a desire to help other people but just want to help themselves, they're the ones that leave and become the migrants that come into our country. So the politicians might be helping the migrants on an individual basis, but they're certainly not helping these different peoples as a whole. As a people group, they're doing the worst thing possible by allowing them to come into our countries. Prime Minister Orbán, who will be attempting to secure a fourth consecutive term of office against a largely unified opposition next year, said the key issue with the mass migration experiment is that there is no way back if it ends up producing negative results. And I do think he will win again because he wins by a landslide. He has masses of support over there in Hungary. And what he's pointing out here, this is the problem with it, isn't there? If you bring in a vastly different people group to your own people group and they both end up interbreeding together, you end up annihilating the original people group and it no longer exists. So you can't actually go back once that's happened. I'm not quite sure Prime Minister Orbán is referring to that, though. He says, let's say that terrorist attacks happen in your country and public safety deteriorates, or maybe the people coming in don't want to work, and you have to commit to huge social spending programs, he said, outlining some issues that could arise as a result of reshaping a relatively homogenous society into a more multicultural one, issues which would be difficult, if not impossible, to reverse once the newcomers and their descendants were entrenched in the national population. And this is the problem that we see happening now. Now that we have a large portion of Muslims that are living within our countries, that means that there is going to be a certain percentage of them that are extremists and a certain percentage of them that are going to have sympathies with ISIS and Islamic extremists and Islamic terrorism. And therefore, we see Islamic terrorism happening in our countries now. And it's very difficult to deal with, because these are now people that are citizens of our country. But you can look at places like Hungary and that there's no Islamic terrorism there. There's no Islamic terrorism in Iceland. The countries that did not get involved in this experiment, as Viktor Orbán calls it, they don't have these problems. Orbán continued, saying, I'm glad that this issue has been decided in Hungary. adding that if the Constitutional Court ruled that EU immigration diktats were incompatible with the Hungarian constitution, then he would be standing by the constitution. Hungarians sense that in Brussels an obstacle has been placed in front of what they want, and when discussion on what to do about it is tabled, Hungarians don't lower their voices, but instead raise them and seek to clear the air. The Poles are similar, and it is no coincidence that we are brothers with the Poles, the Conservative leader observes. And it's great that he's referring to Poles and Hungarians by their ethnicity. He's not talking about citizenship here. He's talking about their ethnicity. The Hungarians, the Hungarian people, the extended family that is the Hungarians. They talk with one voice because they are one extended family. And the same with the Poles. The reality of immigration isn't in Brussels. It's at the Hungarian border, at the Polish border, and in Italian ports. The reality is that we have to deal with the problems that have arisen, and we have to change the rules, he declared. And it's Hungary's sovereign right to make their own rules. They should not have to bow to the diktats of the European Union. And I know people have criticised Viktor Orban for some of his COVID policies, but as far as standing up for the Hungarian people, I mean, you really couldn't beat him. I mean, he really does identify with his ethnicity, and he wants to protect that ethnicity, and he wants to protect the culture that that ethnicity created. I have a lot of respect for Viktor Orban. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.